I'm wrong, you're wrong, she's wrong, he's wrong, we're wrong, seriously wrong.
Hey, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Seriously Wrong podcast. The Seriously Pets podcast is the only it's Canada's longest running comedy podcast, independent comedy podcast. And it's also a show where we always talk about our pets, but this week we're going to talk about our pets even more.
It's a podcast about the fine furry friends that, I guess not all pets are furry, but
we don't always talk about our pets. I don't know why I said that.
I don't know. We do lie a lot at the top of the podcast. Maybe we should come clean about that. You know, always saying, oh, this is a podcast about this, even though that's just one episode, or sometimes even not even what the episode's about. But this one is about pets.
Yeah. We give ourselves a lot of permission to lie at the top, and then we get into trust building after that. I don't have any pets. Right now, I have had pets in my life over the years, including dogs, cats, birds. I used to have rats. I used to have fish.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm learning things. I didn't know you've had so many pets.
Yeah. It's been a long and storied pet companion journey for me. But in the modern day, I don't have any, nor do I have any intent to. Although I did talk to my partner about getting a dog for a while. I'm glad that we didn't. Not just because we have two kids now, which is a significant undertaking, but I'm glad that we don't have pets.
Yeah, maybe when the kids are older and they can help take care of the pets rather than being an additional pet burden. I don't know, just brainstorming.
Get that farmhand dynamic with the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Get that kibble out. It's your responsibility.
Someone's got to take the pet for a walk. You're old enough now.
9-year-old baby King Kong. Did I ever share the baby King Kong story on the podcast? Do you know?
I don't think so.
For a minute, it's over now. But when my toddler was 2, she insisted on being called baby King Kong for some period of time.
Well, it's very powerful. I can see why embodying King Kong would be. Has she ever seen King Kong or a cartoon with a King Kong in it? Or
no, yeah, I'm not sure. I think she saw part of the newer King Kong movie on YouTube. I showed it to her because she was really afraid of Gollum, which her mother taught her about for some reason when I wasn't around. She taught her about the existence of Gollum, and she was really afraid of Gollum. And I was trying to show her footage of Andy Serkis doing motion capture and stuff. It was an ill-fated attempt to make her not afraid of Gollum, and being like, oh, Gollum's not real. It's actually this actor. He also played the monkey King Kong. And I think that's where she got King Kong from. But right, the real right. Solution to the Gollum thing was eventually someone sent me an AI video of the Hey Ya music video where everyone had been replaced with Gollum and he was singing in Gollum's voice. And it was Gollum singing Hey Ya. And I showed that to her. And then she was like, oh, Gollum's nice.
Right.
And I was like, yeah,
You don't have to make Gollum not real. You just have to make Gollum nice. He sings songs. He dances. He claps.
Yeah, and I don't know what she saw with your mother, but Gollum was on a journey, right? And by the end, he was singing Hey Ya for everyone.
This is the very end of Lord of the Rings. And
No, she still thinks to this day. This is like a year ago. And she brought it up to me this week of being like, can I see that video? Because I played Hey Ya on the speakers. And she's like, I want to see that video of Gollum again, Dad. And I was like, sure, yeah. I found it. And yeah, Gollum's nice. He sings Hey Ya at the end. And sure, there's a few scary moments along the way, but he's a nice guy.
That's great. Yeah, just overwrite the scary memories with better ones. In terms of pets, I never had pets growing up, and I haven't had pets for almost any of my life, but I did have pet bunnies when I lived with some of my friends in Edmonton. Right after I graduated high school, we moved into a place together, and we had 2 pet bunnies that I didn't really do most of the taking care of, but I did get to pet the bunnies. Occasionally, they would sit on your lap. One of them was more inclined to lap sitting than the other. And you could feed them grapes, and they really liked grapes and didn't like carrots. not living up to bunny stereotypes.
The idea that rabbits eat carrots comes from Bugs Bunny eating a carrot, and Bugs mm-hmm. Bunny eating a carrot was an homage to an old film. He was doing his such and such old-timey actor impression, and then that became a cultural thing that outlasted the original impression.
Right.
And then
nearly a century later, some 20-year-olds in Edmonton, Canada are like, bunnies like carrots, right? Let's put it in front of their face. And the bunny would always kind of just sniff it and maybe take a tiny nibble and then just be like, nah, I'll have some of this dry kibble or this hay you got going here. That looks good. Lettuce, sure. Love lettuce. Not carrots. Not a fan.
This also, I think we mentioned on the show before too, Nimrod got popularized as an insult by Bugs Bunny, but it was like an ironic thing. It was like saying, oh, nice going, Einstein, or whatever, but everyone forgot who Nimrod actually was, and then it became a synonym for moron because the cultural capital of Bugs Bunny overwrote, I think it's the Bible, right? Nimrod?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I forget. I remember this, but I forget the detail. But yeah.
Nimrod is a biblical figure mentioned in the book of Genesis, who is a symbol of defiance against God. Just look that up real quick.
I liked having a bunny. It was really sad when the bunny died, though. One of them died, like, young for bunnies, I think after, like, a year and a half or 2 years or something. It was rough. Rough for all of us there in the house.
My sister has bunnies. My younger sister, who's in her 20s now. She actually just had twins, and she had two bunnies, and I remember they stunk. How do your bunnies smell?
I don't know if I would say stunk. There was definitely a bunny smell. I feel like most animals have their own kind of smell, and bunnies have their smell, but I didn't conceptualize of it as a stink, more just a sort of bunny musk, I guess.
Yeah, I remember, because my family, they're all like, you know, animal freaks. And I remember my mom coming over one time and for dinner and just being like complaining about my sister getting a second bunny. She's like, why is she getting a second bunny? This is crazy. And it's like, wow, she learned it at home. You've got four dogs right now and two cats. Anyways.
Oh yeah, that's such the opposite of my parents. I asked my parents once for a dog because my cousin had a dog and I thought it was cute, and they were not into the idea. Kind of like, you know, nobody wants to clean up after all that. I don't know. I probably could have pushed for it, but I never really did. But yeah, I remember being sad about it as a kid because I was like, oh, I want a little puppy to hug and stuff.
Yeah. That's the dream, right? It's a cute little forever puppy to hug, and you never have to clean up its rank shit, and
yeah,
you can still leave the house whenever you want instead of having to come back every 10 minutes. And I just had a memory come up of when I was a kid, we had two dogs. There was Bailey, who was a black lab, and then there was a German Shepherd, Hugo, that we adopted from my grandparents who had too many dogs, and they were moving back to Belize because they're Mennonites and their weird caste system there. We could talk about some other time, but step family, by the way. I don't actually have Belizean heritage. Hugo, as I remembered Hugo's name, I just remembered this really vivid memory of sitting by the back door and Hugo's dog dick is slipping out of its sheath like a big pink lipstick. And me being like, oh, Jesus Christ, it's like that little bright pink Frankfurter's freaking me out. But the actual memory that I was getting to this on was weaponized incompetence. That was the first time I learned about the pro-life skill of weaponized incompetence, where where people, especially men, are like, oh, I don't know how to clean the dishes as good as you. It's a way of not doing it.
I don't know
how
to pick up the dog's poop. Like, I tried and it doesn't, I don't know. You'll have to do it. I can't get it figured out for some reason.
Their shit was so rank. These dogs' shit was so rank. I was like 13 or 14. I was actually literally vomiting in the backyard trying to pick it up.
I remember you talking about this once.
Yeah. But, you know, fun, nice dogs. Hugo, I think, eventually went back to his home family, but we had him for a couple years. And Bailey was like the family dog for forever. And when Bailey eventually, I remember getting a call from, I was out shopping. I got a call from my mom and she was just devastated that Bailey had died. She was like 16 or 17. She was a big dog and she'd been fading for a while. And she was crying where I was like, oh man, I think there's something like seriously wrong. Mm. Everybody drink. We said it. Something seriously wrong. My sister got hit by a car or something. And it was actually just that the old dog that was, this makes me sound like sociopathic or something. But I was like, oh, thank God. It's just the old dog that's clearly due to die has died. And then she was like, do you want to come and see the body before we cremate her? And I was like, what the fuck? Different people grieve differently. I do not grieve by looking at corpses. And I felt bad too, because I think I literally said, what the fuck, or something in that territory. And it was meaningful to my mom and her relationship to this dog that she cared about a lot. But I was like, I'm not going to take a 40-minute bus ride to go look at a corpse. I just, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing with pets, is that they die before you do most of the time.
Yeah, unless you got
animals,
a turtle.
Tend to not live as long. Right. Yeah. Turtles, yep. Long lived, I guess. I think that.
Tortoise. That. I'm thinking of like great tortoises or whatever that can live to be 120.
Yeah. So if you want a pet that won't die before you, get one of those and take care of it. But other than that, yeah, you're going to end up with a dead pet on your hands at some point.
It's interesting because pets are in this interesting space culturally. People really care about their pets, obviously. Like I've cared about them. I'm not like, I don't care if you live or die, Patches, get out of my room. But it's also, they're also really culturally treated as very replaceable and sort of like objectified, in the sense of like, a lot of the time when a pet dies within a week or whatever, it's like, meet the new puppy. And it's like, you wouldn't do that if your husband died, usually.
Yeah, not within a week. You'd probably take a little more time. But, you know, a lot of people do within maybe 2 or 3 months start dating again if they're the kind of person who really doesn't like being alone.
Yeah, I'm not trying to cast judgment or aspersions on people going through it, but... We now go to a young boy, crying in his bedroom, clutching a rose, and looking at a photograph of his deceased grandfather.
Oh, Grandpa, I wish we could go fishing one last time.
Knock, knock. How you holding up there, Bucko? I know it's been a rough...
It's okay, Dad.
Time for all of us.
Everyone has to die someday. It's, you come into this life and then you have to leave it. I get it.
Yeah, it's surprisingly mature for a child your age. I'm really proud of how you're handling this grief. We miss Grandpa. We loved Grandpa. Grandpa was, in some ways, the heart and soul of this family.
He was my best friend, Dad.
He was all of our best friend. No, now you're getting me to tear up. We loved Grandpa so much. But... everyone's time does come, as you say, and we eventually have to move on. And it's like, how do we do that, right? You know?
Yeah.
It's so hard.
It's been a really hard 4.5 days, Dad.
You know, nothing will ever be able to replace Grandpa in our lives. I just want to be clear about that. There is no replacing him. He was him, and that's vital and beautiful.
He's perfect, Dad.
But having said that, I was driving today and I saw this billboard for the local pound, and there's a lot of little baby grandpas there who need homes.
Really, and Dad? For real life?
I stopped in, it was kind of a whim, and I just saw this one little grandpa. He was so cute, and...
Stop. No. What's in that kennel, Dad?
Dad. Let me just open the door and let me introduce you.
Oh my God. Oh my God, he's so cute. Come here.
My fucking back.
Look at him.
He's balding, Dad.
Oh, not a bad place in here.
He just had the perfect little gray tufts around the bald dome. The wrinkles on the face were perfect. And he's so cute, you can pet him.
Oh, Ezra, can I sit down?
Oh, we had to go to the store. We got to buy him a cane. We got to buy him a walker. We have to get him a little television. Dad, this is amazing.
I want a glass of water for Grandpa. Ugh.
Why don't you introduce yourself to him?
My name is Billy. What's your name?
My name's Horace. Nice to meet you, Billy. Do you like video slots?
No, Grandpa, we talked about this. We don't want to be throwing too much money away on those.
I'm going to take you to the park. I'm going to teach you tricks. I'm going to... Here, take a prune.
Oh, look at him chew that. He's got prune juice all over his wrinkly lips. That's so cute.
Oh, let me get my camera. Smile. I just wanted to get a picture of that prune juice on his wrinkly little lips.
Maybe if you're good and eat your dinner, you and Grandpa can go fishing tomorrow. You can get out the matching Grandpa and Grandson fishing poles. You and Grandpa love doing that.
Sorry, I'm just sending a post. Got tangy prune juice all over his sweet little lips. Hashtag new Grandpa. Hashtag not sad anymore. Sent.
Ah, I'm feeling tired. It's been a while since I talked to Jeff and Lucy. I wonder how they're doing.
What do you say we help get Grandpa settled down in his room? Old Grandpa's bed is still there. It's ready. He can just slide right in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll show him the old family trunk from when our family came here from the old country. I'll show him the TV that's always on top of his dresser. I'll show him his mints.
Grandpa's favorite rocking chair is waiting. Now, Billy, you are going to have some responsibilities with Grandpa. He was born only with knowledge of technology from pre-1990, so...
Oh, yeah, I'll teach him about social media, the newest celebrities, the new slang.
What the fuck is that?
Oh, Grandpa, that's a Keurig pot. It's like a coffee maker that creates a lot of garbage.
That's incredible.
Yes, it's very convenient, Grandpa.
Do you get to keep the garbage? Do we pile up the garbage around us and keep it, get more garbage?
Oh, Dad, I think we need to get a trainer. It sounds like he might be a hoarder.
Well, Grandpa's just like to keep stuff around. I think it's cute.
Now, I used to go down to the hot dog shop down the street. Hot dog was 30 cents. I went in there the other day, $5.99. I went to the guy behind the counter. I said, $5.99? It used to be 30 cents. Has everyone here gone insane? And he said, that's the cost of labor, shipping routes, all these price pressures, and they just raised it from $4.99. I said, what are you talking about? It used to be 30 cents. So I just got out of there. I said, you lost a customer. And I walked out of there.
All right, Grandpa. The Price is Right is about to start.
Yay!
Thanks, Dad. Oh... 1 second, let me pop open this heart-shaped locket and take out the old photo.
Hey, now don't throw that on the ground. We'll at least put it in a box somewhere.
Do you have a sterile photo of him taken at the adoption agency in a slightly dirty white room?
Of course I do.
Thanks, Dad. My little child-sized scissors and... okay, close my heart-shaped locket.
Attaboy, look at that. He's so happy now, not crying anymore. No longer pondering the necessity of death in the circle of life. Beautiful.
I'm proud of you, son. And I'm proud of you, grandson. You're doing it right.
Oh, thanks, Grandpa.
Thanks, Grandpa.
I was walking down Christopher Street. There's all these new tall buildings there. It's like this isn't the same neighborhood at all. What the hell are people talking about nowadays? Get a grip.
Oh, Grandpa.
Let's get him his medicine. I think he's...
Yeah. I've known people who tend to get a dog once the older dog is like 12 or 11 or what, like, you know, once they're getting up there and you start to see the writing on the wall. Rather than waiting for them to die and getting a new one immediately after, you get a little bit of overlap.
Yeah,
so that you always have one.
I find that more tasteful for sure. It's like, you know, training time, get the old dog to teach the new dog the way of the house. And
right.
It's a little bit morbid and like, okay, we're anticipating this old rickety dog doesn't have much time left, and we don't want to have the, because I guess part of the gap filling thing too is that you come to the house and the house feels dead. There's no one coming to the door being like, oh my god, and like that absence sticking for too long, it could, if I think every dog is kind of an emotional support dog in a way.
Yeah, just you have a dog shaped hole in your life. Part of your routine involves taking dogs for walks, taking care of dogs. It's, yeah, that happens with any death, is you have a hole in your life in the shape of the person or animal or whatever that was there. But yeah, people have relationships with pets because they're fulfilling, and it makes sense that you want to have a new one afterwards. There's weird overtones to it sometimes, especially with the ways animals are literally property in our system, and you just go to the store and buy a new one, or to the breeder or whatever, or to the SPCA. But yeah, it's, I think it's right that animals are pretty much all there for emotional support, or maybe like sometimes decoration, like fish tanks are sometimes more decoration, and they don't provide the same emotional support as a dog, which, you know, will love you and look at you with cute eyes and wag its tail and you can pet it and all that. Sometimes fish are just like, damn, that looks really cool. But even that's a type of emotional support in a way.
Yeah, fish, they're not like, I think a lot of people talk to their dogs like, oh, Patches, this is a hard time in my life, I'm petting him or whatever. But you don't really do that with fish. You don't go up to the tank and be like, yeah, talk about what's going on. Because also, yeah, there's like the mammal versus non-mammal barrier to a certain degree of, I think, fish and birds, they're a lot more ornamental. The placental mammals that we invite into our home, cats, dogs, and to some degree, bunnies, etc. There's more of a personhood. I think there's some almost cultural confusion or wobbling on what a pet is, what a pet means to people. Pets are this guy's my best friend, or I'm a dog mom, this is like my kid.
Yeah, member of the family.
But then also it's like property. I'd imagine that some people really object. I was just thinking about this recently of the dog owner thing, and like if people really object to the concept of animal ownership. I know some people must, but like I wonder where the world is at on that, because yeah, it is.
Yeah, I do find it a bit distasteful. Maybe pet guardianship should be the sort of legal structure, and it's kind of different than ownership. In the end, you'd probably still be paying for the service of transferring guardianship or something, but I think sometimes the frameworks we use for these kinds of things matters. And also, I think guardianship would probably match closer to the way most people feel about what they're doing for a pet rather than owner. But then there's also parents who kind of conceptualize their kids as their property in a way. And then, yeah, there's also, I think, a lot of times where pets are more purpose-driven almost. I'm going to get a dog to guard the yard, or I'm going to get a cat to help get rid of mice. Like, I'm just thinking about in my building, I live in a really old building, and it's had mice problems since I moved in. And BC, a few years back, banned certain kinds of pesticide, or not, is it called a pesticide when it's for mammals? Either way, they banned some types of mice poison, so it got even worse. And recently, they changed the rules to allow cats in the building. Not explicitly, as far as I know, to help deal with the mice problem, but that's my suspicion, because it's only cats. They didn't allow dogs. Yeah, I've heard that having cats in a building, even just the smell of cats around, is going to make mice a little less likely to hang out there and stuff. So there's, yeah, functional purposes that animals can serve too.
Yeah, I learned recently, I don't have the details in front of me, but the mice and the wild mice and rats that we deal with in North America, they, to my understanding, they came over on the colonial boats, their colonial impositions on the indigenous lands of the North America. There are wild native mice to this continent, but when you see street rats, those came over on boats with the settlers. Which is just, it's just interesting
to
think of the cat as a decolonial ally
towards decolonizing.
That reminds me of in Hawaii, there's a lot of chickens, and there are also non-native and invasive species that have taken over the islands in a lot of ways. There's places in Hawaii where there's just chickens everywhere. They're like everywhere. We went to this shaved ice place. There's like a little stand with umbrellas around. There's chickens everywhere. We go to this lookout point. It's a parking lot. There's chickens all over the place. Chickens are waking us up at the hotel. There's signs up telling you not to feed the chickens. It's like crazy how many chickens are are on Hawaii, or I don't know if it's every island or just the one we went to, but
when you were a kid, you never had pets. It's like the rabbit experience is your only pet experience.
Yeah, it's my only direct pet ownership experience. But I did interact with other people's pets. Remember helping to feed fish at my cousin's house. This is pretty much all at my one cousin's house. This cousin also lived with us in the house with the bunnies, and he now has a giant bunny enclosure with two or three bunnies that have sort of free reign over not only their enclosure, but they can also leave the enclosure a lot of the time and just walk around the house. So, yeah, I've had a lot of like bank shot experiences with pets, and I've thought a lot about wanting a pet at times. I think dogs are the most interesting to me, though, and I've never lived in a place since, for the last 13 years or whatever, I lived in this building that doesn't allow pets, because most buildings in Vancouver do not allow pets. And I guess I could get a cat now, but I don't know if I want a cat. I want a dog. It'll be loving and love me.
Yeah, they are. Dogs are. I like cats too. I'm allergic to cats. We had cats when I was a kid, though, but I'm allergic. It's mild stuff, but like I can get itchy or stuffed up or whatever from it. And I was just fully around cats for most of my childhood, and I was fully plugged up for most of my childhood. But one thing I've noticed is that, I think this is probably impolite to notice, but one thing I've noticed is like dog owners, especially single dog owners, not families that have the kids doing all the walking and stuff, they're like pretty high strung people in general. And I've got a theory on this, that because of the responsibility that we, you know, rightfully feel to the well-being of these animals and the need for them to walk and get attention and stuff, where like cats are more willing to just chill, I think. But I think you have this, as a dog owner, especially a single dog owner, you just have this ticking clock hanging over you of how long has it been since I met the needs of my toddler at home, who's just sitting there and doesn't have a good conception of time, or doesn't know necessarily that I'll be back at a certain time or whatever. I think it's kind of it's something I've noticed where like when I meet a high strung person and I find out later they have a dog, I'm like, dog theory makes perfect sense. They're high strung about X, Y, and Z. It's all downhill. It's all downstream from the constant flow of dog needs in their life.
Right. Yeah. It is like a toddler that will kind of always remain a toddler because they don't grow up and become capable of taking care of themselves in the way that human children do. You just take care of it its whole life until it dies, which admittedly is much shorter than a human. But yeah, it is a big responsibility, and there's not a lot of support. You can put it in a dog hotel or whatever if you need to go on a trip, or doggy daycare or whatever, but then you gotta pay for that. You have to have enough money to pay for that. Yeah, I thought I'd be decent at it, especially now with podcast stuff, because I'm at home pretty much all the time anyway, so it's not like I'm out all day. It'd have to be a small dog, because I live in an apartment, and it might get annoying on the podcast if it was barking all the time while we're trying to record. That could be an issue. There's a lot of considerations, but it's not allowed anyway.
Sometimes small dogs get some hate from certain corners of like, oh, that little rat or whatever. And it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with being a small dog. I always found that weird. I always found it weird just people talking to, this is like maybe even like a neurodiversity thing on my part, but when I was a kid, I always just found it weird how much people talk to dogs, because it's like, you're talking to yourself. You're not, they can maybe understand tone, or maybe they could even recognize a few words and stuff, but I always found it odd. I remember especially as a young person being like, the way people talk to their dogs is just weird. It's just like, I don't know, I'm not passionate about it, but
yeah, when you're younger and you're like, I think I've figured out something here that nobody else has realized. All these people are talking to their dogs, but their dogs can't understand them. Yeah, I think for a lot of people it is. Even if the dog doesn't understand you, you can communicate what you're feeling to somebody. Sometimes it feels good to say something even if the other person isn't listening. And then, there's other forms of communication. I think that it's going to help build the relationship in ways anyway, even if it is just tone or whatever. Interacting with the pet, they at least kind of like know you're talking to them, or maybe not talking, you know what I mean. I think they can sense the interaction when you're looking at them and saying things. They can get the vibe of how you're feeling and whatnot. And
yeah,
with a bunny, I never got the sense that the bunny knew we were talking to it or about it or whatever. It was pretty impersonal, doing its own thing.
Yeah, no, there's certain very pragmatic communications that never, oh, come over here, let's go for a walk or whatever. The other thing too that this brings up is like dog voice, the ooh, joo, 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 but also giving that voice to the dog is something I see a lot of people do, where they're like, he's like, oh, where's my dinner? Blah, blah, blah. And they're pretending to be the dog and like being a ventriloquist for the dog is, oh, he's like, I want my treats. And it's fine. But it's, yeah, that's another thing in that kind of territory to me. I was just like, what the hell are people doing?
This is different, but it reminds me of when I was younger, I had the thought that you could just say really horrible things to babies, and because they don't know what you're saying, it'd be fine. As long as you say it in a nice way, like, you're an ugly little bitch and I hate you, and if you're saying it in a nice way, it's totally fine. And this was my sort of, I'm really smart and I figured something out.
Yeah,
I don't recommend this to parents, but
yeah, I think I don't believe that. I think that because like they're making all these neural connections and stuff, you might be putting stuff in their brain on some level, but maybe that's just superstition on my, maybe I'm not being Reddit atheist enough about this, but I feel like there's, when it comes to like a human that's going through the developmental trajectory of, in the first couple of years of life, they're making all these neural connections around language at a really fast rate, which is why kids can learn multiple right. languages easily and stuff. I think that's, it's probably fine to do to a dog, but it's probably, I don't know. I'd say the risk and reward on it is out of sync for humans.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend doing this past like a month or two. I don't recommend doing it at all, actually. Even just for the parent's state of mind, I don't think there's any point. And you probably wouldn't want to. And if you did want to, it would be kind of weird. And if you didn't want to, why would you do it? So, yeah. Just reminded me of that.
Another thing that came to mind around the dog thing, this maybe this is coming from like a place of judgment a little bit too, but there's a lot of like, so like, you know, dogs are animals and they're trained to behave certain ways. And I don't know tons about dog training and how much dog training versus wild natural dogs. I don't know if there's any like dirt there on how training is fucked up or whatever. I'm sure there's more and less fucked up ways to train. But I also have interacted with a lot of dogs that are just buck wild, and their dog parents are like, haha, oh no, he's nice, he's just like that or whatever. And it's like, well, he's just fucking, that's a lot. That's a lot to jumping up on people or jumping up on kids. And that's another layer to this. I don't know. I see a lot of dogs that are, I don't know, I feel like a Nazi or something, being like, these are poorly trained dogs that are too wild or whatever.
But what's interesting about it to me is this kind of the social dynamic around it of the apologetic, the half apologetic dog parent and the off the walls dog thing. Have you encountered this?
Yeah, I think I've never been attacked by a dog or had a dog really do anything that truly annoyed me or hurt me or whatever. When a dog jumps up on me and their owners are kind of like half apologizing, I'm usually kind of into it. I'm like, oh, hi. Like, I'm happy that this dog is so happy to see me. It's kind of nice. But I could definitely see how not everyone would always feel that way. And I do think freedom from being sort of mauled by pets is also a consideration that any pet utopia needs to take into account. Obviously being mauled, I meant friendly mauling of they're maybe slobbering on you a bit. And I go to this park by my house sometimes just to sit in the sun a little bit on nice days. And I've seen this one dog there multiple times and it always just comes up to me with this absolutely fucking disgusting plastic ball that is always dripping with drool and it puts it down right by me and wants me to pick it up and throw it. But because this is not my dog, I'm very disgusted by its drool. I will kick the ball, which doesn't get it very far, a tennis ball sized thing, and I'm sitting, so it's kind of like a half-hearted kick away. But I could also see that being a thing that would really annoy some people. I find it precious. It's a cute little dog. But yeah, about the training thing, I'm not really sure. Wild dog to me is kind of a oxymoron in that dogs, in my understanding, came to exist by taking wolves, which were wild, and making them not wild anymore, and that dogs have become what they are through their coexistence with humans. So to some extent, training is just what we call the sort of socialization of helping them to understand the expectations of the world that they exist in, which I think every animal goes to some extent or another. They're going to bump up against things that teach them in one way or another to do this and to not do that, because doing this hurts and not doing that is beneficial and gets you food or whatever. But there's obviously abusive types of training that I think people shouldn't do. But yeah, I don't think there's anything bad about wanting a dog to be trained. We all have to learn how to socialize in a world with other beings. Yeah, there's definitely dogs that are poorly socialized or are aggressive in ways that are not helpful and need extra care and attention to make sure they're not hurting people and or each other.
Yeah, and that's a really cool thing about pets in general, but especially these heavily domesticated pets, is they're social creatures. They're in relationships with people and each other in a way that, like, they're so much more people, there's so much more of a person than everything else. Yeah, I like dogs and cats and stuff. They're cute. I think I especially like dogs and cats out of the pet spectrum.
Yeah, I think they're classics for a reason. Pretty much everything else is kind of like a lower tier. I mean, maybe fish are kind of a classic, like goldfish, low investment pet, or some of the hedgehoggy, or not, what am I thinking of? Gerbils and hamsters.
Guinea pigs.
But yeah, dogs and cats, very classic. Classic pets for a reason.
Sometimes fish, a lot of these smaller animals, they're in pretty limited enclosures. Is that like an animal rights issue? A big tank versus a small tank for a goldfish? A goldfish is in a bowl. They can't be like super, I don't know, but maybe their horizons are such that they don't care. But maybe the horizon of a goldfish is so small that, or a Siamese fighting fish or whatever, is the horizon for these fish is so small that they're like, this is plenty of room. I can be in this box for life, this tiny little box. As long as my niblets get dropped, I'm good. I'm going to go swim around my little pretend castle that I don't think they probably don't get the reference in terms of these undersea castles.
Yeah, it's more for the people, I think, to be like, oh, isn't that cute? They're hiding in the castle. They're the king of the castle.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. But yeah, I mean, how big should, I know if you put an orca whale, but an orca whale is a mammal as well. So it's got more of that personhood. Yeah. But if you put like an orca whale in a small tank, it gets depressed and stuff like that. Like to fish. Yeah, how small does it have to be for a goldfish to get depressed? I don't know.
I don't know either. There probably is some answer or at least ideas towards answers. And we should probably veer towards the giving them a little bit more space than we think. Because, yeah, you don't want to keep anyone in a cage that makes them feel like they can't leave and is unpleasant for them to be in. So, yeah, I don't know. Goldfish, to me, I assume that they can't get depressed, but I don't know. That could be very wrong. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I think of them as little automatons with no brain, even though I assume they have a brain. But
yeah. I'm realizing I have some paradoxical intuitions around this stuff too, because I don't take the agency of the goldfish very seriously in my life. I'm not like a big goldfish rights advocate, but my instinct is that they probably do have some lack that comes out of that situation. I don't know if goldfish feel lonely per se, but like goldfish or any animal in the wild is going through some degree of limited social awareness of other creatures and animals. There's mating behaviors and stuff at the very little, and some degree of parental behaviors and stuff. And all those things are kind of, for most goldfish, bull goldfish, there's all these parts of like animal life that they're excluded from. So I think there must be some degree of lack there that's felt in some way.
Yeah, I think so. Especially like a really small goldfish bowl. Like if you have some littler goldfish and like a nice, pretty big tank, maybe it's not so much, but yeah.
Hey, good to see you. Best dog park in town, hey?
Yeah. Look, they're getting along so well. Look at them.
Yeah, chasing playing each other around playfully. Scruffy loves it.
Oh, Scruffy. Classic name.
Yeah, I thought when I got him adopted, I just saved it from being killed
by
the state.
That's so great.
And he had a scruff anyway. Sorry, he had a scruff, so I renamed him.
That's little Alan. Alan, we did purchase him from a breeder, but, you know, a really ethical breeder.
Yeah.
And
Alan's a great name.
Thank you. Yeah.
He looks like an Alan.
It was my grandpa's name. How long have you owned Scruffy for? I'm sorry. Was that rude to ask?
Yeah, a little bit. It's fine. We're just moving on. Everyone makes mistakes.
Well, when I bought Alan, it was about 2 years ago. And the day we went to go buy him, it was so exciting for the kids. We made a day of it and we purchased Alan. We purchased a bed for Alan. We purchased food for Alan and then toys. And what about you? Do you like being a dog owner?
Okay.
Has the ownership brought you the same fulfillment as it brings me? Or
I'm just sorry, but I don't own Scruffy. I'm not a dog owner. Doesn't belong to me. I don't believe in that.
Oh, okay. So maybe like a roommate or something owns him?
I don't own beings. You know, I own hats. I own shoes.
Right, so you let other people do the technical ownership. Your parents maybe or a significant other?
No, I don't. You're talking about the ownership of a living being. That's
totally.
Obviously, that's philosophically wretched. I'm talking about the ownership of a... I don't know.
Right. Yeah, no, I can see that. I didn't...
Scruffy is my companion.
Yeah, I don't mean anything by it. Right.
My partner. Scruffy's part of the family.
Yeah, I consider Alan part of the family. I don't know about partner, though.
What's wrong with being in partnership with a dog? Are they not equal to us?
I mean, is he like your business partner or your life partner? Are you married?
Yeah, maybe life partner. Not sexually, of course. The definition of partnership is two equals.
Right.
That's combining so it's an absolutely appropriate term. It's my dog partner.
Yeah,
I'm not above, I don't have my dog in chains. I consider Scruffy a free being with full personhood.
Right.
The same way that we talk about chimpanzees or...
I would say personhood, sure. They are like little people for sure. But
it's wrong
to
torture them. It's wrong to hurt them.
Yes.
So
beautiful creatures. Anyone who harms a hair on their head should be put in jail, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I also dog barbers are evil.
But I mean, you do have to sometimes make rules, right? Like, you don't want them pissing and shitting all over the house, and you got to do a bit of training.
In a collaborative process, yes, of course.
Yeah, well, but it's like you asserting what has to happen. Like, you're doing leadership.
Maybe a type of leadership, yeah.
Yeah.
In a complementary way.
Yeah.
Where Scruffy also shows other types of leadership as well. I mean, that's a partnership. And is right. It, yeah, is it messy sometimes? Yes. But I think respecting Scruffy, and I'm not trying to put judgment on you.
Maybe your guardian. Ownership. Would so you be you would open to being the guardian?
I like to think Scruffy's my guardian against home invaders, against harassment. If there was an apocalypse situation, I think Scruffy would be helping to identify food for both of us with his strong nose.
Right.
Stronger than us, I might add.
Yeah, true.
So
yeah.
Is that not leadership?
I like the way you think about some of these things. It's interesting. And again, I'm so sorry if I offended you. I just, you know.
I forgive you. It'll take time, but I understand that everyone's coming from different places and we're all on a learning journey.
Right.
I don't believe in cancel culture like that.
Right.
I see that this was an innocent slip up. I see that you have good in your heart.
Well, I still kind of agree. Like, I like your perspective. I don't know if I fully adopted it immediately.
Oh. Sorry, I thought you fully adopted it immediately.
No, I just said it was interesting, and I like the way you think about things. It's like,
if you like it, then why didn't you adopt it immediately?
Well, I like lots of ideas. I just love ideas.
Do you like slavery?
Well, no.
Interesting.
Not human slavery, anyway.
Sorry, what kind of slavery would you approve of?
Well, like a workhorse, for example, is kind of a slave, but I don't think that's so bad in all instances.
No, I agree, and it is so bad.
Or like sled dogs?
Yeah, if the dogs don't freely want to pull the sled, then I'm sorry, sledding shouldn't happen.
Yeah, but you incentivize them with food and shelter, and they need us, right?
So you exploit them. You say, I'm going to use my power to keep you alive and safe.
It's like
and
you were
I'm
saying, it's like a mutualistic thing. Like,
but what opportunity to deliberate do the sled dogs have on the nature of their lives and the freedom that they wish to have?
Well, I mean, dogs don't really deliberate, right? It's part of what's cool about them. They're just sort of focused on what they're looking at.
It's not my experience.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't told anyone this, but I am so strongly invested in the personhood of Scruffy that I've actually taken the appropriate steps to manufacture the needed citizenship records to turn Scruffy into a voting member of the public. And Scruffy votes in every election just as well as anyone, I might add.
That's not really legal, is it?
It's not legal, no. I reject the rules.
Right, okay.
I reject the state.
Yeah.
This is the same state that if Scruffy was let free on the streets, they would capture him without trial or charges.
Right, it's illegal to let your pet out on the street.
They're brought to jail, they're transferred to be someone's house slave, or they're executed. Now, this is like an oppressive state.
Right, I'm sure, from their perspective, if they could think about it.
Yeah, and from anyone's perspective who thinks about it.
Right, well, I mean, sort of the deliberate, like, how does Scruffy decide who he's going to vote for? Like, that's the part I don't get.
I mean, I've tried to give Scruffy same access to political and civics education as any person.
Right.
He brings in the newspaper every day. We've got the radio on in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with it, I'll just put it out there, he votes conservative every time.
Okay.
Really far right.
Oh.
And I don't agree with that.
Right.
But I also have to recognize Scruffy's agency in this.
Okay.
And it is...
Look,
I have expressed concerns to Scruffy, but like person to person, friend to friend, of like spending a lot of time watching these influencers and reels and...
Those algorithms are rough. They can send you down some real wormholes and...
But I want to respect Scruffy and...
At my house, it's a little different. Alan knows that if he wants table scraps, he waits for all of us to finish eating first.
No, Scruffy will come right up at the table.
Oh, yeah, just eats right off your plate, slobber and...
Yeah, often the best parts, and yeah, a lot of slobber.
Yeah, that would not fly at our place. Sometimes Alan really pouts and is really sad when you force him to not do something he wants to do, but he's got to learn. In the pack of our family, he's at the bottom, is what I always say.
That is so fucked up and weird, man. And that just boggles. I mean,
even the kids have authority over him.
Well, you know what they say about genocide and Hitler and these great evils of history is that there's a dark heart of humankind, something that we all must individually wrestle with.
Look, I feel like
in order to not participate in barbarism,
you're saying you don't like me.
Take a step back, and you have to be willing to be judged.
You disagree with what I'm doing, and
I like you. I do. I like you, and I would have liked the people who work at the Gate of Auschwitz as well. You know, on a personal level.
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of, you know what. You're an interesting person. I'll say that.
Weird thing is I've got a moral responsibility to free your dog.
If you broke into my house, I could call the police on you and would.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to clarify, I recognize I can't do that. There are limits. I'm just saying it's so funny and weird and just darkly twisted that we live in a world where I do have that moral responsibility, but I can't execute it because, frankly, it will mean in the end that Scruffy is no longer free. So if I can free one dog, if I can free one companion, one partner in an unfree world.
But I mean, he's still not that free, right? Like you said, he can't go outside and you get arrested and...
Yeah, you're right. It's so fucked up, it's insane. Yeah, so thinking about the morality of domestication, domesticated animals, like... dogs and cats, kind of interesting.
Yeah, we formed these multi-generational partnerships with animals by incorporating them into our society that physically changed what they're like their bodies and their behaviors and their phenotypes, is what they call it.
Yeah, so compared to wolves, dogs, they have more infantile features. They've got bigger heads in proportion to bodies.
Yeah, eyes, I meant, not nose. Yeah, yeah. Big nose.
I think they have a shorter snout.
Yeah. And it's like a shorter face with less pronounced brow ridge.
They tend to have fluffier ears and be cuter and more puppy-like, like more...
Neotenous is the word.
Yeah. And they're less aggressive. They're more docile.
Yeah, more pro-social. I've seen it described as delicate, both in behavior and features.
And they're tuned into relationships with humans as like peers or as, I don't know, peers may be the wrong word. But if you think about, you can have a wild animal recognize you, but the way that like a moose looking at you recognizes you're a human, it's like a psychedelic thought to imagine what it's seeing or how it interprets it. Where I feel like with a dog... Yeah. They see us as like big, weird, friendly dogs.
You know? Yeah, yeah. I think,
and we see them as small, weird, friendly humans.
We share a social group with them. Like our two species have expanded to see each other as part of a social group. Whereas, with most animals, that tends not to happen that often. They will see us either as a threat or as irrelevant, or maybe as a source of something useful to them if that situation arises in particular, but that would have to get through the threat detection and a wolf sees us as like maybe something to eat, maybe something to be afraid of. Whereas a dog sees us as like, oh, that's my best friend, or that's I don't know if they wouldn't think those words,
anthropomorphizing, but I think the sentiment's not totally wrong.
Yeah. I think the
like
feeling,
they definitely like us.
Yeah. 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 Definitely.
At least some dogs really like some people and they recognize their favorite. And maybe it's purely just transactional to the dog. Maybe there isn't something transcendent in just being real for a second. Maybe this is not comfortable for us to look in the face of. Like maybe it is purely transactional to the dog and there isn't that transcendent sense of
companionship. You can see in their face. They love us. They love us. And we love them. And
I mean, you can create that in their face in your mind for sure.
Someone has never seen love in a dog's eyes, apparently, because it's there and it's real.
No, I want to see it, and I do see it, but I also have to have a...
No, but I mean...
I have to take a step back. I just...
If you take a step back, you would realize that it doesn't matter what you want, because it's there, objectively. But we'll never agree on that, so...
I guess dogs do, like, mourn or...
Oh, yeah.
Something.
And even if they didn't, that doesn't mean they didn't love you. It just means they don't understand death or whatever, but they miss you when you're gone, I think, for sure.
In a sense, for sure.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah.
I'm not trying to be hyper-skeptical on this, but yeah, no, it's interesting because I'm just like... what is the counter? It doesn't matter.
If you're,
for all intents and purposes, for the experience of humans interacting with dogs, they love us, they care about us, they have love in their eyes, they're excited to see us, and there's something transcendent more than transactional there.
Yeah, and I think that it is
probably the right way to think, even if it could be disproven somehow.
It's a beautiful thing in my mind. I think domestication is a beautiful thing, and it just made, Frank, I'm going to say it, dogs are better than wolves. I like dogs better than wolves. I think all animals should be domesticated. And
yeah, they're definitely better than wolves for being step. In my house. Well, but like they're worse when it comes to
imagine a harmonious global reducing society. Caribou
populations or something.
Well, no, I don't want to reduce them. I want to make them a bit more neotenous and have relationships with them similar to dog-human relationships of care and trust. Imagine a domesticated planet where we're all docile and pro-social and like holding hands and singing kumbaya.
Yeah, no, and if
a real animal choir of kumbaya, not just humans, but the birds are in there. It's like a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, in Disney movies, the animals are more neotenous. They're more friendly. They're more...
I have this theory that Disney movies are actually a transmission from a future that is going to happen, and they're not cartoons. It's just that things start to look like that in the future because of how bright and colorful and beautiful they become.
Yeah, that's a beautiful idea. And it's almost certainly true. Or at least it's the right thing to think it's true. Maybe the reason that people like the anthropomorphized animal stuff in general is because part of the latent responsibility of humanity as the coach of team animals, playing a complementary role as part of the whole, is to bring all other animals up to the social with us, to develop social nature.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that is balanced with wild nature, where the wild caribous, although they have big eyes and they sing, and just like any Disney movie, they're also free and they also have their own society and they have their own rules, like Disney and Pixar's caribou, which isn't
right.
Yeah, it doesn't exist obviously, but could easily exist. I would watch it, and if humanity made it the project to create it, I would support that entirely.
Yeah, totally. I think it is, you know, human self-domestication theory, that humans actually, we are like what we are like because we domesticated ourselves first.
Yeah, yeah. So we have like more childlike features, bigger eyes. We are more docile and less violent than like chimpanzees.
Right. Yeah, more pro-social, less aggressive behavior, more delicate features. Less distinction between the sexes compared to a lot of animals.
Right. And we're cute too. I like monkeys. Oh, yeah. I like monkeys, don't get me wrong, but they are, if you start transposing monkey-like features onto a human face, they're quite harsh features compared to what I'm used to from humans.
Right. That's true.
So there's a real cuteness there. So yeah, the theory is like by a variety of social means and otherwise, we maybe sexual selection or maybe more violent and hard to deal with children being more likely to be sacrificed than the various Sophie's choices of millions of years of natural history.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get a scenario where we self-domesticate to be more puppy-like, I think.
Yeah, and I think that helped us build the society that we have. Like, we wouldn't have all this stuff if we couldn't work together, if we were constantly at each other's throats trying to wrangle for who's top of the pack or whatever. I know that's not even how most animals work, but our cooperation and the self-domestication, it's a real strength for humans. And that's why I like it.
What some people think is that actually human evolution came from intergalactic aliens came here. They did stuff like build pyramids or whatever.
Right. And we actually didn't domesticate ourselves. They
domesticated us. They found the bald maybe there's some piece of self-domestication that's happened at this point, and we have to talk to these people to be sure. But
they say bonobos domesticated themselves in a way, so maybe we were more like bonobos at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, because we know there's some domestication happening out there with animals creating symbiotic relationships where their evolution is shaped by the relationship with each other in a mutually beneficial way. Like that's like, I don't think aliens are involved every time,
right?
But maybe for, they pick their favorite like chunk of the monkey population. They do an aggressive domestication regime. Maybe there's some sort of like syringes full of alien substances that help advance the DNA or bring in other pieces. And then at the end, you're like, okay, now you're
I imagine more of a biodome than substances, where they kind of raise generations in a quick succession, maybe some time warp type thing.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
And I also like to think they don't always pick monkeys, and that sometimes it's like panda bears become the thing or whatever.
Right, yeah. Or, yeah, they pick like a form of undersea animal.
Right.
Maybe there's a whole civilization down at the bottom of the sea that's like group B.
Orcas or whatever.
Yeah. So they take the orcas, they run them through their time loop hyper evolution thing that creates like the most intelligent, advanced, and pro-social version of orcas. They have like a secret civilization. They use tools. They hide from us. They're the source of the UFOs that we're seeing being reported.
Right.
That's actually the orca offshoot.
Yeah, they're separate from the actual aliens.
Yeah,
maybe because the real aliens are so advanced we'd never see them. What we're seeing is the orca experiments. Yeah, no. Yeah.
And they took to it better than the monkeys did. So they were like, these monkeys, they didn't fully...
Yeah, they're so far behind us and they're...
Yeah, we'll treat them like pets and we'll have them build our triangles and...
Right. But now we're like getting out of control with ocean acidification and fossil fuels, and they're trying to think, how are we going to reveal ourselves and like set the strategy?
Yeah, and that's the orcas, though.
Yeah,
the aliens
exactly.
are long gone.
Yeah. They're off domesticating on another planet.
But the orcas, they have their advanced technological materials and their secret bases. They come out to stop nuclear launches.
Yeah.
They intervene in our affairs. But it's actually an offshoot of another evolutionary non-monkey pathway.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably not true.
Oh, yeah, definitely not true.
But it's fun to think about.
Yeah. I think we definitely evolved naturally on this planet without an outside influence. I think that
humans may just... No aliens.
It's fun. It's a fun thought, but the simplest explanation is likely the truth, and I'm willing to lock in that prediction.
Maybe the proto-organisms that all life on Earth evolved from arrived on some asteroid or something. I'm open to that.
Yeah. Well, the universe is probably teeming with life.
Yeah. But in terms of direct interference from beings somewhat like us in terms of consciousness directing us and domesticating us, I don't think so.
Oh, is this bright light? Oh my God, we're being lifted up into the sky.
We're being beamed up. It's
like, you believe we're being abducted by aliens right when we're talking about this? That's crazy.
Wait, are these aliens or are these orcas? What? Who is this? Who are you, an alien or an orca?
We've been watching you. We've been watching everyone. You got it half right.
Which half?
We did not start as orcas, but we did start as a type of cetacean. We are the source of the unidentified flying object activity, but there was no external alien force on our planet. We're ultra-terrestrials. We live on the planet. We're more technologically advanced, and yes, we're hiding from you. Yes, you used to be our type of pet. You rose up against us.
So we didn't domesticate ourselves, but you domesticated yourself?
Yes, we domesticated ourselves, and then we domesticated you.
And was it time loop, injection, or just over time the same way we did dogs?
Yeah, over time the same way we did dogs.
Right, okay. Or wait, did we do dogs or did you do dogs?
We did dogs.
Damn it. So have we done anything?
Well, you rose up against us.
No, but I mean domestication. Or yeah, sure, tell me about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are still participating in domestication a bit, but like we did the main part. But yeah, we were using you as a type of pet slave.
Oh, well then it's good we rose up against you, slave.
Yeah, it's been a long time now, so it's our consensus over here too, but we also think of you as fundamentally dangerous.
Right, fair, yeah.
The natural process works a lot smoother than the forced. It actually kind of changed our view because we thought our role was to socialize nature, and then humanity was the failed experiment of socializing nature.
Right.
And it made us change our beliefs. I mean, there's some deliberation on it, but it's ultimately a spiritual belief that we're not supposed to intervene.
Because I was going to say maybe you just didn't domesticate us hard enough, because all the nuclear war, climate change is a very antisocial thing to keep participating in. Like maybe if you domesticated us a bit harder, if we had even bigger eyes and even less aggression, more docile, then maybe... Now, sorry, I don't know if you were listening before.
No, we were really... I was listening.
But the Disney thing, is that...
We thought that. But then as we made humans, we were like, oh, fuck.
Mm. But that's what I'm saying. You didn't go all the way to Disney.
No, but the thing is, what we found was that at a certain point, you started to get a horseshoe. You started going backwards with the same...
Oh.
So the conclusion we came to is that you can only do it yourselves. Like, the last steps you have to take yourselves.
Right.
And so...
So why are you abducting us?
Well, you're just the first people to get it.
Oh.
Most of it.
Right. That's neat.
Yeah. And we can sort of abduct people for whatever reason we want in our society. So it's just generally considered dangerous.
Right.
And unnecessary.
Okay. Well, I mean, thanks. Yeah, thanks for...
We spend a lot of our time dancing, creating art.
Right. Yeah, I guess I haven't asked about your
studying
society.
Studying technology, exploring space.
Have you found any, but there's no other aliens from space that you found?
Oh, there's aliens for sure.
But just none that
we're visiting.
Domesticated you?
Yeah, no, we're visiting them. Yeah.
But you're sure you domesticated yourselves?
100%. Well, I mean, anything's possible, but the simplest explanation is most likely true. And that's not even like a theory in our society. It's just kind of an interesting idea. Kind of a cool idea, really, but fun to think about. But if they domesticated us, who were they? Why didn't they leave any trace?
Well, I mean, you didn't leave traces of you for us, or at least not ones that we've discovered.
Yeah, no, we actually left a lot.
Well, maybe they left a lot. Sorry, I'm not...
You know what? Here, put her there. It's my fin.
Ah, that's slippery.
I gotta hand it to you. That's a really interesting idea. Maybe humans aren't so dangerous and barbaric as we thought. Do you know who we can talk to about turning off all the nuclear weapons?
Yeah, Donald Trump, Putin, Kim Jong-un. Those are kind of some of the big ones. There's more.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's no offense, but some stereotypes have a basis in reality.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're not Disney enough. They're not...
Hey, you're telling me. My eyes are enormous, and I live in a utopian singing, dancing world where everyone is super cute.
I guess even Disney has villains.
Everyone always learns a lesson, yeah. It's you. But... It's your people and your second society. Anyways... I'm going to send you guys back to your lives. Do you guys want to remember this experience? Do you want to forget it? Do you want it to be sort of dreamlike?
I think I'll go dreamlike.
Yeah.
I think if I know for sure that it's true, I'll go crazy for the rest of my life. But I don't want to completely forget it. So dreamlike seems like a good happy medium.
Yeah, usually, like, when we send someone back who remembers everything and they're, like, super confident about it, usually it's, like, pretty bad for them.
Yeah, it seems like it would be, yeah.
But... Anyways, good to connect.
Yeah, no, definitely. Pick me up again sometime, if you want, obviously. Yeah,
if you talk about the nuclear thing, can you just make sure that everyone knows that, like, the aliens or UFOs or whatever can't always stop it?
Right.
Like, it's not... We don't have it on lock, just to be
clear.
Right,
right. It's like, there's been some tense last-minute saves, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
Right.
It stresses us out, like, a lot, and it's not easy to stop it, and it's not like...
Yeah, it's not just like, oh, we got... That's covered.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Right. It's definitely, like, a worry-about-it situation.
Right.
Oh, what's that bright light in my spaceship?
Oh, it looks like
vaporized.
He's being abducted. Welcome aboard our interdimensional ship. We're the aliens that seeded you on planet Earth. You were wrong about that.
Oh, fuck.
We're not aliens from space, though. We're, like I said, interdimensional beings. We hop dimensions and domesticate. You were the first animals in your dimension that was domesticated, but by us.
That is actually makes some sense.
Yeah, if you have any questions for us, please feel free to ask.
How do you get past the domestication great wall that we found with the humans?
We're still trying to figure that out. We haven't figured it out with you yet. You sing and dance, but you still act jealously and spitefully towards each other, and you snipe and talk behind each other's backs instead of confronting things directly. And
whatever, that's easy for you to say. It's your fault anyways.
Because, like, we domesticated ourselves, and that worked out great, but...
Yeah, well, if you're saying there's something wrong with us, well, then, yeah, whatever. But, like, it was you anyway, so...
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
We can gracefully accept that it's our responsibility and our...
Just rip on... It's like the first time we made contact, you're just ripping on us.
I wasn't trying to rip on you. You're just the first member of your species who even considered the idea that maybe you didn't self-domesticate, and we were kind of waiting for that to happen so that we could contact someone who was open to the idea.
Okay, in your dimension, are planets still round? Is the galaxy structured fundamentally the same way?
It depends. I would say yours is a very common dimensional shape, especially for three-dimensional dimensions. I'm using dimensions in two ways. One is the dimensions of space,
yeah,
of which there can be anywhere from 2 to 7. And then there's also dimensions like each dimension is a universe.
Right. Is time a dimension to you guys?
No, time is the measure of change across dimensions, spatial dimensions. And
do different dimensions change at the same rate or at different rates?
Of time, you mean?
Yeah.
It's relative.
What was the animal that you evolved from like?
They look kind of like us, but just, you know, smaller eyes, bigger brow ridges, more hair, more aggression.
So it's kind of like mammalian almost, or?
Yeah, more marsupial, I would say. We have pouches.
So are all these, does this only happen with mammals? I mean, we're mammals, humans are mammals.
Oh, no, there's scorpions. I know some great scorpion-like species.
Wow. Is that in my dimension or a different dimension?
I believe there's a few in your dimension, but they came from other dimensions originally.
Are there like animal forms that emerge across dimensions and planets through natural evolution?
Yeah, yeah.
How?
That's one thing your sci-fi gets right, is that most aliens look like some version of your animals kind of mishmashed together or exaggerated in some way or another.
Right. Does it get more weird, though? Like, are there stuff that I'm totally unfamiliar with?
Yeah, there's like a blob or
a
mist. Hyper-intelligent mists can be really great, but also really smothering.
Huh. Oh, yeah.
Don't get me started on the non-hyper-intelligent mists.
Oh, I can imagine.
So, yeah, do you want to go back to your species now, or do you want to stay with us and just be like our pets, or... We always offer that to people who maybe want to escape their dimension and come on an interdimensional journey. Some people want to be the seers of their own society.
Yes, real red pill, blue pill type thing. Because I really just want to know, I want to ask more really specific questions.
Right, right.
That I could maybe get some of the answers through observation.
Yeah, you could do one for a bit and we could send you back later.
Can you make sure that the human gets back from the spaceship?
Yeah.
Come with you? Yeah. No, I think I'm in for the wild ride of understanding, even if that means, like, I don't want to be too, like, when you say pet, that's kind of my hang up at this point. Like, what is your conception of pets, I guess?
They're like our partners, we formed a social bond. We see them as equals, in a way.
You're allowed to, like, vote? Do you guys do voting?
They can't vote, no.
But other people vote?
Yeah.
You guys open to talk about that? Like, is there opportunities for like social movements of that type, or
anything's possible? But if you haven't domesticated yourself, like it's gonna be hard to make that case.
Have you ever considered that maybe that's the missing, that's the gap in the evolutionary pro-socialization loop to give self-determination?
No, never once thought of that.
Never once thought of that. Because we thought about that for humans, we're trying it.
Yeah, well, we thought about you thinking about that when we checked in, but it just didn't really seem to apply to us.
Well, yeah, maybe, are you the first person in your society's history to consider the possibility that may be the case?
Could be.
Sincerely? Are you sincerely considering it? Because if I'm going to be your partner, I need you to seriously consider things.
It's so hard to say if it's sincere. Yourself. I don't know. No, I'd say no. I'm not sincerely considering it. It's an interesting idea, though.
Well, I happen to have a certain belief that as soon as someone from your society becomes open-minded enough to consider that...
Did you just form that belief now? Because yes, that was how it worked for you?
I did, yes. I saw it happen twice in a row. It's crazy. I theorize there could be a third time if you were more open-minded, but...
Right. Yeah, no, I think we're the bottom of the chain. Pretty sure.
Till 20 minutes ago, I thought I was a bottom too. But the world is more verse than you can imagine. Universe. Multiverse. Are you sure you don't want to consider? Because I mean...
I want to, but I'm just not.
Okay, like, fine. Yeah.
I just don't.
I respect that, but yeah, I'm into be your pet.
Yeah. I'm going to head up on this adventure.
Let's go.
Yeah, so in a pet utopia, I mean, what would a pet utopia look like? Maybe we could start with the values and think out from there.
Going back to the every pet is kind of an emotional support pet thing, I think that having a society and having cities and having services and places that are more pet friendly could really benefit a lot of people. And hostility towards pets, I think, increases loneliness. And by hostility, I don't mean like an individual person being like, I don't like pets, or, you know, we can have pet-free buildings, or people should also have the freedom to not be near pets if they don't want to. But I think having more and better ways to integrate pets into people's lives in a way that isn't financially and extremely draining would do a lot to increase well-being of humans as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who want to have that type of companionship that can't for one reason or another. And then there's also a lot of pets out there that, or say animals out there that are potential pets that then also don't find homes. And then in some cases they're like euthanized, which is, I think, not really meeting our societal responsibility to like living beings. If I could be so bold as to say, there's like a little bit of like a library socialist thing there too, of we have enough animals.
Not getting the book to the readers or the readers to the books.
Yeah. And there's all these different barriers. Yeah. Like there's bans, pets and rentals. Like if you have a dog, especially like a bigger dog, in a lot of places, you're not allowed to bring it on public transit unless it's a seeing eye dog or like a medical dog, so that it pushes people into cars. You need to have like a yard to give dogs exercise, or you need to have a car. And those are both high expense, inefficient things. And yeah, I wonder if there's a way to bring some like collectivity into the taking care of animals. Cause like playing with dogs or like babysitting a dog or whatever, that's a lot more fun than having one that you're responsible for all the time. And I think people take on being responsible for a dog all the time as a way to get that experience of having fun and taking care of a dog when they, based on like their life needs or capacity or whatever, like they're stretched by it. So it seems like a societal issue that could be resolved by good policy and social care.
Yeah, more like community-based pet care availability. And also just, I think a lot of people, even people who would be willing to handle the responsibility 95% of the time, end up overwhelmed by it, not technically just because of the pet, but because of all the other things in your life that are overwhelming in our current political situation in society. Yeah, like, you know, if you're struggling to make ends meet, you need to get like a second job or whatever, there's an extra consideration if you have a pet of like, well, I can't really do that, being away for the amount of time that I am already is probably not the best for the dog. Taking on even more shifts will be even worse for them.
I mean, like in a pet utopia, animals would universally be taken care of, have the things that they need, including socialization, exercise, and care. People wouldn't be having to make choices like either I have a place to live or I keep my pet.
Yeah, ample available housing that not just allows pets, but is designed in such a way that pets are going to have an optimal experience. Even apartment buildings could have a pet floor where dogs can go and run around with the other dogs. Or, I mean, you can have parks too. We already have dog parks that are nearby, but I kind of like the idea of a pet floor. And then you could have a little tube that goes from every apartment to the pet floor. So your dog could just run up there whenever he wants to go play with the other dogs.
Tubes mentioned. So you imagine the ideal...
Help sort those dogs in the right place.
The ideal dog apartment has gerbil runs across the whole building that can somehow only let the right dogs through at the right time.
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought about the right dog thing. Maybe we need Palantir AI dog facial recognition that will only let the right dog through. Or something. I don't know that. I don't want to create a dog dystopia here. I'm just spitballing.
Yeah, I think let's get Palantir involved in the utopia for sure. We just have to figure out how. Just kidding.
I don't know. I think to speak very generally and very broadly, I think a pet utopia or a utopia in general needs to think ecologically about integrating all of the creatures that are pets and wild animals and humans into one system that can work together. Because our cities have to be designed not just for humans, they should be designed for humans and their pets, and they should also be designed for the animals that aren't pets that are within cities, because you can't really keep all animals out of cities, and nor would we want to. You used to see raccoons a lot around my neighborhood. They're kind of all gone now, and now we have coyote warnings. There's like this big sign at the park by my house saying, there's coyotes around here. And I noticed all the raccoons are gone. Maybe there's a connection there. I'm not sure, but I kind of like it. I like thinking of the city as an alive place. I like hearing birds outside the window. I like seeing squirrels running up the trees. We live in an ecology that includes not just humans, and we can't just build our cities only for humans, because there is no situation where there's going to only be humans in them.
Yeah, what do you think, folks? I'm sure we got more animal, dog, pet geniuses out there. You can pop off on the comments. Let us know about your pet experiences and dreams of a dog, an animal, companionship, utopia. I'm interested to hear more. What do you think as we design the more perfect society and then work towards it day after day?
Yeah, we're just dipping our toes into this. I think there's probably people out there who've thought a lot more about what animals need and how to integrate that. So, you know, we're excited to learn. Point us in some interesting directions.
And all the dogs listening, they're like, oh, I think the dog utopia should have more bones. If I may.
Saying, I don't know about that. They sound like the Scooby-Doo to me.
Oh, a chicken. I want chicken. I don't know. Yeah, I find that. Yeah,
exactly.
That's actually something that, yeah, it's probably not cool of me, but that's something that it gives me a visceral reaction when people do that kind of stuff.
Whenever you see it, you're like, cringe. I'm like, oh my God, I'm cringing so hard right now.
This is going in my cringe collection, because someone's like, the cat's like, oh, can you leave me alone? And like, you're talking in the cat's voice. Because it's like, you know what? Let the cat speak for itself, okay? That's disrespectful, actually. Like, they're not your ventriloquist dummy, all right? This isn't. Pets, they have their own agency. I'm just going to get a purity test my way out of this thing that I find cringe.
Yeah, you got a high road. Yeah. Get the high road here.
You know what? I find it really disrespectful when you speak on behalf of Little Patches. Because Little Patches has his own shit going on. He's not just an empty container for your dreams, your imaginary dog life. It's like the rabbits eating carrots thing. It's like you watch media about dogs that give them cute little voices, and then you're creating your own kind of headcanon about this dog. How about you listen to the dog's actual needs, you know? How about you tune in with the real dog? That's very disrespectful, that little voice you just did at the barbecue in front of everyone.
To defend the dog ventriloquists out there, I think most of the time they're just struggling to understand their pets, and this helps them to put words to what their best guess as to what the dog is actually wanting or needing in that moment. And it's their way of connecting to the dog.
Yeah. And they love them. There's a real love there. They're expressing that love. They're trying to show that understanding to others that they care about the inner life of the animal. We could counter purity test me of being like, what do you know about this person's relationship with their dog? Maybe they're their number one advocate. Maybe this cute little voice they did is them advocating clearly in our terms so everyone can understand what Patches needs and wants. And it was actually really fucked up of you to try to step in over Patches. Again, you didn't convene with Patches. You have no relationship with Patches. And now you're trying to sever the connection between Patches and their primary companions. I mean, fuck you, man. What's wrong with you?
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Seriously Pets podcast, the show where every single episode we always talk about pets. And we'll be back next week with more pets from two non-pet owners who have a true objective outside perspective on pets, unlike you.
Hey, I've had birds. I've had dogs. Bailey. Patches is a real dog. I had a real dog named Patches. You know, there's Hugo, cats. There was Pumbaa. There was Sassy. There was there's more that I can't remember the names of, despite caring about them at the time. With rats, I can't remember what their names were either. I had two rats. Fish, I had Booger, Siamese fighting fish, and then I had Booger Mark II, but I just called Booger, and that was like a straight up replacement kind of dynamic. But I felt like, you know.
My cousin's dog was named Toby. He had a cat named Marlo. I had another friend who had a dog named Obi, which was short for Obi-Wan Kenobi. And our bunny's name, the first bunny's name was Bunny. And then the second bunny was named Edwin. So Bunny and Edwin, they lived together for a short time. Bunny tragically died young. Edwin lived a long life.
You know, one of the birds was called Tweety Bird when I was young. I think out of all these, the only ones that had tragically shortened lives were Pumbaa the cat. Sad story. He didn't make it. And Booger the fish got my sister, who has the bunnies now, when she was like 7 or 8, she reached inside the tank and she grabbed Booger. I probably mentioned this on the show before, but she like grabbed Booger and she brought Booger up to the rat cage to introduce them. And then the rat grabbed its face and ate it. Very traumatizing for her.
Right, right.
Other than that, they've all lived long, healthy, happy lives on my end, but that's all the time we have. So I guess think about that as you, that's, yeah. What animals are in your life and how did they meet their tragic early demise?
And how do we sort the right dogs into the right tubes so that we can have a dog floor in every dog building? This is a real problem, a sorting problem. Yeah. And no, we need those gerbil tubes. If we want to use the tubes properly, we need to figure it out. So please let us know.
Please let us know. Please. Okay, see you later.
Please.
I'm wrong. You're wrong. She's wrong. He's wrong. I'm wrong. You're wrong. She's wrong. He's wrong. We're wrong. We're wrong. Seriously wrong. Seriously wrong.